Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to this on-the-record press conference with Director General Pascal Lamy and Deputy Director General Valentin Rugwabiza. I'd like to extend a special welcome to our friends from Oman who are here for a seminar for 3 days. We have specially arranged for Arabic interpretation, which will be on Channel 4. The Director General will give a brief opening statement, and then we'll take your questions. We'll have about 30 minutes. Monsieur Lamy, s'il vous plaît.
Thanks, Keith. So the purpose of this briefing is to give you a heads up on the main signals from this Aid for Trade Global Review. Although we are only having the wrapping up session with our members this afternoon for obvious media timing reasons, you are given a sort of preference, but please don't insist on this with our members. Well, both Valentin, who's been the operating part of this Aid for Trade Global Review, and myself get from these 2 days is basically four messages. Number one, trade opening is part of our efforts to stimulate and facilitate the crisis exit for developing countries. And this message was, I think, 100% clear from what the UN SG said yesterday morning when he inaugurated this global review. As an immediate follow-up of that, Aid for Trade is needed to make trade happen. So we have to keep pushing for making trade possible, but we all know that for various reasons we need aid for trade, i.e. More capacity building support in order to translate this into concrete opportunities for business and for people. Second lesson, despite the downturn, despite fears which we had and which many developing countries had, there's no sign of donors shrinking their future commitments. On the contrary, and I insist, on the contrary, we had a number of individual indications which bode well for the future, even it doesn't yet cover the whole of the post-OTAN agenda. You probably know that we've had Aid for Trade pledges in 05 that go to OTAN. We now have to look at beyond OTAN, but we've already collected a number of pledges that go beyond OTAN. What Japan announced yesterday with the 12 billion 09-011, which means plus 2 billion as compared to 06-08, so it's not just renewing existing commitments, it's 2 billion plus. UK, who announced yesterday that they would spend 1 billion per year over the next 3 years, which is more than that what they've done in the past. Netherlands, which is a smaller country, but who announced 550 million per year on just Aid for Trade. And this comes on top of the fulfillment of existing pledges. If we look at some examples of who's done what as compared to the 05 pledges, US has donated 2.2 billion, which is 85% of the Hong Kong pledge, and we still have 09-010. EU Commission and EU Member States are 95%+ of their objectives, and we are still at mid-09. And Japan has already donated more than 100% of its Hong Kong pledges, sort of 135%. So the numbers I gave previously are on top of these numbers, which, and that was part of the monitoring exercise, tracking whether these commitments are fulfilled or not, and the answer is clearly yes, plus some positive signals for the future. Third lesson, a lot of interest, attention on how things develop on the ground. And on the three examples which we had decided to focus on, which is the North-South Corridor in Southern and Eastern Africa, the Great Mekong Delta Region Project, and the Mesoamerica Road in Latin America, which are three examples of what technicians would call transport corridors, but what trade ministers and operators in the WTO call economic corridors, because the pooling effect of putting together these new networks on trade in the region, which most of the case increases regional trade, is already obvious in the case of the Great Mekong Delta, still to come for the North-South Corridor in Africa, which is still at an early phase, and already there in some part of the Mesoamerican project. So, three good examples of moving from the initial agenda, which was the 8 for Trade agenda in 05, to the new agenda, which is implementation. Fourth message, some rather clear signals on how we should proceed post this second global review. Number one, more focus on evaluation. We all know that evaluating the impact of official development assistance, whether it's strictly speaking or whether it's concessional loans, is a bit of a methodological problem, but obviously we need to poke more into that so that both donors and recipients increase their ownership, and it will be increased if the overall impact on trade, growth, poverty reduction, gender mainstreaming, and many other issues appears in the evaluation. Second dimension, which we have clearly to focus on in the future, is the regional dimension. The lesson of a few years is that most of these aid for trade programs or projects is of a plurinational nature, starting, of course, with big infrastructures, whether they are road, rail, or energy grids. But this is also true in softer areas like sanitary facility standards, trade facilitation, for instance, because, you know, it's no use if you're a landlocked country opening your borders or putting a customs entry point on a 24-hour basis instead of closing the border at night if your neighbor doesn't do it. It's obvious. And then private sector involvement, and we obviously have to do a better job, and we have tried to start discussing this with the ministers and our friends in financial institutions, whether we keep the business involvement sort of decentralized, which is project by project, country by country, region by region, or whether we try and do something which is more visible, which is connected to the WTO monitoring, and we have to think about this. And finally, also the growing importance of the South-South dimension, Aid for Trade was born in 05 with a mindset which was, you know, it's a North-South issue. It's Northern rich donors giving more money on trade capacity building to 1,000 poor countries. In the meantime, we've seen that countries like China or Brazil, for instance, have stepped in quite vigorously. It's also true in regions like Southeast Asia, where, for instance, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia are shouldering Laos in reforming its trade regime, its trade openness in the WTO accession process. And this South-South dimension is obviously very important, notably in terms of providing technical assistance. Very often, countries who've gone through these processes very recently are better at helping those who are still in an initial phase to get to grips with these terribly difficult issues. Finally, fourth convergent message, and those of you who attended the opening session with all financial organizations, regional banks, World Bank, IMF, yesterday morning probably noticed this, which is this very strong call for the conclusion of the round. And I think, this was, I will borrow the soundbite to Cham Prajit, who's the trade minister of Cambodia, when he said yesterday that Aid for Trade and the Doha Round are Siamese twins. You can't separate them. They have only one heart. And nobody else than a Cambodian can talk about Siamese twins the way he did it.
We'll take questions now. If you could give your name and your news organization, limit yourself to one question and make it brief if you could, so we can take as many questions as possible. First question, John Zarakostas.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Lamy. I was wondering, sir, if you could elaborate a little bit on your projections on where do you think the round is going and when it will finish. We saw some clippings highlighting that you're now saying the round could conclude at the end of 2010. That's a radical revision from what we've been hearing from you for quite a long time. If you could elaborate what made you move the end of the round to the end of 2010 in your assessment, sir. Thank you.
Well, what's important in terms of when we can conclude the negotiation is not what I say. It's what WTO members and what negotiators say. That's the real test of their political will, which we all know then has to be translated into negotiating authority and capacity to trade off in order to close the few remaining issues which have to be closed. So I'll probably be able to give you a clearer answer to this question on Friday after the G8 and the G8 plus 5 discussions on trade.
Jean-Paul, vous avez la parole. Allez-y.
Merci, monsieur. Bonjour, monsieur Lamy. Hier, vous avez beaucoup insisté dans votre discours d'ouverture sur le rôle du secteur privé. Vous venez de le souligner encore une fois ce matin. Est-ce que vous pouvez définir un petit peu plus largement ce que vous comprenez par le secteur privé? Est-ce que c'est l'institutionnel ou alors c'est vraiment les hommes d'affaires? Et si c'était les hommes d'affaires, il va sans dire que malheureusement dans la plupart des pays qui sont concernés par l'aide au commerce, notamment les pays d'Afrique, le secteur privé est très absent, pour ne pas dire très pauvre.
Encore une fois, ce n'est pas ce que nous pensons tous les deux là-dessus qui est le plus important. Nous, on est là pour aider, pour driver, pour bon. Ce qui est sûr, et Valentine pourra dire éventuellement un mot de ce qui est apparu hier à la session qui a été dédiée au rôle du secteur privé, à la fin du compte, tout ça, ce n'est pas des États qui commercent, hein, c'est des entreprises. Il n'y a pas de doute sur le fait que le résultat final, il est entre les mains d'entrepreneurs. La question, c'est est-ce que dans notre effort de monitoring, qui consiste à exercer une pression politique, qui consiste à mettre sur la table suffisamment d'éléments concrets de comment les décisions politiques qui ont été prises se traduisent par effectivement des programmes et du funding, est-ce qu'on a besoin d'associer dans ce système de monitoring un composant business? Et là, on a plusieurs choix. On peut très bien considérer que, dans la mesure où tout ça dépend énormément de réalités locales, et où on ne peut pas traiter de la même manière l'Amérique latine, certaines régions d'Afrique et certaines régions d'Asie, c'est une dimension qui n'est à prendre en compte qu'au niveau, disons, national ou régional. On peut aussi considérer que, et ce sont des suggestions qui ont été faites, par exemple, certains secteurs, une approche sectorielle business, se prêterait assez bien à une approche globale. Hein, et Valentine pourra donner un exemple. Deuxièmement, on nous l'a dit aussi hier, il y a un certain nombre de fondations privées qui sont dans l'aide au développement pour des raisons de corporate social responsibility ou autres, et qui ont peut-être leurs moyens. Donc il faut qu'on creuse ça, mais disons, votre point de départ est juste, il y a, c'est très hétérogène. Je suis sûr que FedEx ou UPS ou une grande compagnie internationale de shipping va assez vite voir son intérêt à ce que Aid for Fred, ça marche. Bon, c'est peut-être moins évident, mais on a aussi l'avantage de bénéficier de l'expérience du Centre du commerce international. Et Patricia Francis et ses troupes ont été très présentes dans toute cette discussion, parce que là, on a tout près de nous, si je puis dire, une expérience concrète. Valentine, tu veux compléter ?
Mais quand on parle, ce qui est ressorti hier des membres, c'est qu'en parlant de secteur privé des pays en voie de développement, le secteur privé qui était ciblé était celui des petites et moyennes entreprises. Ça, c'était le groupe qui les intéressait plus particulièrement. Et ce groupe-là, il est apparu clairement que son implication est dépendante de sa propre capacité à s'impliquer, à être impliqué aussi bien dans la mise en œuvre que dans l'évaluation. Et cette capacité est limitée par l'accès au financement de ce secteur privé. Et cet accès au financement a été identifié hier dans la session du secteur privé comme un secteur sur lequel il va falloir concentrer les efforts dans les années à venir. Bon, maintenant, il est clair qu'il y a aussi un potentiel énorme qui reste inexploité, comme le disait M. Lamy, dans les fondations privées, mais aussi dans les multinationales qui ont un savoir-faire, qui ont la capacité d'un certain transfert de savoir-faire dans leurs relations d'affaires avec le secteur privé des pays en voie de développement. Donc cela reste aussi un potentiel à explorer qui est assez énorme. Les fondations ont, en plus de ce savoir-faire, la prédisposition, si vous voulez, à un investissement qui n'aura des retours que sur un long terme. Donc ça, ce sont des choses sur lesquelles nous allons concentrer nos efforts, faciliter les efforts des membres au courant des années à venir.
Yes, please, we'll take a question right here from the gentleman behind John, and then we'll go over to Laura. This will be in Arabic.
أنا صالح زكواني من سلطنة عمان ضمن وفد يزور حاليا منظمة التجارة سعداء بهذه الزيارة وبلقاء مستر لامي سؤالي سيد لامي تحدثتم في وقت سابق عن انكماش محتمل في التجارة العالمية بنسبة 10% تقريبا. هل هذا التوقع لازال قائما وأين يكمن الخلل تحديدا؟ هل هو في الانتاج في التمويل أم في الاستهلاك؟ ثانيا بالنسبة لبرنامج المساعدة من أجل التجارة الذي تحدثتم به أمس إلى ماذا هو موجه تحديدا؟ شكرا.
First, my 10% number, which is the WTO number, is a forecast for trade, the volume of international trade in 2009 we forecast as being minus 10% as compared to the volumes of 2008. It's not the growth of the economies, it's the shrinkage of world trade, which for a number of reasons is much larger than the shrinkage of the economies, thanks God. Aid for trade is the part of international development assistance which is geared to supporting trade capacity building in developing countries. It starts from a very simple consideration that the core business of the World Trade Organization is opening trade, and we do this basically with regulations which our members negotiate and which together with them we implement, if necessary litigate, and we have the sort of trade-related technical assistance part that goes with that. That's fine. Create rules that open trade and allow our members to trade on a more level playing field in addressing subsidies, in addressing trade defense and so on. But if you don't have the productive capacity, if you don't have the infrastructures, if you don't can reach easily a harbor which is not jammed, if you don't have a cold chain to export mangoes, no way you can grow mangoes, but if you don't have all these things you won't export them. So that's where Aid for Trade comes in, on the basis of projects, programs, priorities which are country decided and which then donors, the World Bank, the IMF, the European Development Fund, USAID, MCC, the Japanese International Assistance System have to fund. So that's what Aid for Trade is about. And the linkage between the crisis and Aid for Trade is obviously that crisis is hopefully short-term, Aid for Trade is medium-long-term. These projects, these programs often take 2, 3, 4, 5 years, which is why we have to make sure, insist that the funding of these programs is not impacted by the crisis, because then it would be a sort of double whammy for developing countries who suffer already from a crisis they haven't originated, but the exit of which, if their own investments are also impacted, the exit of which would be made even more difficult.
We'll go to Laura and then we'll come over here to this gentleman.
Thank you. Mr. Director General, I wondered if you could elaborate somewhat on what your message is to the G8 related to trade and the Doha Round. Could you tell us, I mean, what is your message in the feasibility of getting a round concluded in 2010? And if that was going to be the goal, then what would you say needs to happen this year so that that can happen?
I never answer a question starting with if. It's a rule which I was educated in by Jacques Delors when I was very young. He told me you never answer a question starting with if. My message to the G8 will be very similar to my message of the G20 in London, adjusted to what's happened since. On the trade part, and I'm specialize on the trade part. I have my views on the rest of the agenda, but that's for others. Keep pushing against protectionist pulsions, which we know are there. They've done it reasonably well, although slippages, as evidenced by our monitoring report, and it's no total coincidence that our monitoring report was issued last week. It's in order for everybody to assess precisely the situation at the time of the GIEC. So be aware that the fight goes on, and that given my own sense that the worst of the crisis in social terms is still to come, which means that the worst of the crisis in political terms is still to come, because it's economic, social, political. The stress tests for the WTO system as a system that prevents high-intensity protectionism is still to come. Number two, if you're serious about keeping trade open, please understand, which every trade negotiators know, that the best way to keep trade open is to keep opening trade. Hence, the renewed urgency of concluding the round, which is a message which developing countries are now passing unanimously. One of the consequences of this crisis has been that the impact of this shrinking of trade is harder for developing countries than for developed countries, for a simple reason, which is the proportion of the part of the economy they trade is higher. So inevitably, trade has a higher importance than it used to, and making sure that the insurance policy against protectionism is renewed, reinforced, which is the basic thrust of the round, so that developing countries' comparative advantage is better served, has more actuality. You know, paying a bit more for your insurance policy is something which people often think when the fireman is at the doorstep. It concentrates minds on the real dangers. Number three, aid for trade. And I won't repeat the message of this conference, which is also directed to the G8, and the timing is no total coincidence. And fourth, keep oiling trade finance, hence, for instance, the launching of this Global Liquidity Fund yesterday, together with the World Bank, with a number of countries, with commercial banks who've stepped in, because short-term, as you all know, it's an important problem, notably for emerging countries. So these are my four basic messages in terms of the timing for the conclusion of the round. Again, let's wait for the discussion among leaders, not for me to preempt this the day before or 2 days before. I'll be there on Thursday and on Friday. I will report to them. I will discuss that with them. They will discuss that among them. So let's leave this open for the moment.
We have time for two more questions. The gentleman here, and then we'll go over here. Please, sir.
محمد شيزاوي من سلطنة عمان. مع المدير العام تحدثتم عن ضخ مزيد من الأموال في النظام المالي العالمي من أجل تحفيز التجارة، لكن أليس من المهم وضع نظام مالي عالمي يضمن عدم تكرار الأزمة المالية التي نشهدها حاليا؟ هل لمنظمة التجارة العالمية جهود في هذا الإطار ومناقشات مع المنظمات الإقليمية والدولية؟
Well, the answer to that is yes, but WTO is not driving this. I think everybody here knows my analysis of this crisis, which is that it originated mostly, if not only, in a lack of international regulation of finance, which had hyper-expanded and hyper-globalized. I understand, and that's what I heard in London when I attended the G20, that G20 leaders, a number of international organizations who are specialized in this, whether it's the IMF or the Forum for Financial Stability, are working on that, i.e. trying to address this hole, this big black hole of regulation which we had in the international system, which in many ways was irrational. I understand they're trying to do this, but this is not WTO driven. We have an international system where health is regulated somewhere, telecoms elsewhere, labor elsewhere, trade elsewhere. If there has to be a serious finance regulation, it has to be elsewhere by the people who know this business and who can negotiate, implement, if necessary, litigate, educate the rules which they will hopefully get. But my sense is that we're not yet there.
Last question, please.
Thank you. Shabtai Gold with the German Press Agency. You spoke about aid for trade, but you also mentioned the social impact, and you said that there was a concern that the social impact could lead to some sort of protectionism. So what would be your recommendations to the countries that might have this result to make sure that the economic crisis doesn't have a social impact that would then lead to a protectionist backlash?
Well, on this, my answer is the same as Juan Somavia's answer, although he heads an organization which is devoted to social issues, and I head an organization which is devoted to trade issues. When you look at the ILO summit a few days ago here in Geneva, unsurprisingly, they have the same position as the one we have on trade. And the prescription of the ILO on the global agenda is fight protectionism and conclude the Doha round. So there is probably a bit more coherence in the system than there used to be. Now, seen from where I am, and it's not new, I've always thought that there is a close connection between openness of trade and the support by public opinion of opening trade and the quality of social system. For a simple reason, which is that, as we all know, opening trade reshuffles economic and social fabrics. This is not harmless. This is a plus at the end of the day, but like many pluses in life, it's a sum of pluses and minuses. And the minuses, including on the social side, about qualifications, about compensation, about retraining, about moving from one location to another, are there. So the efficiency gains of international trade are not painless. And if you look at the correlation in public opinions between the quality of social systems and the positive attitude to trade, the correlation is absolutely obvious. There are few exceptions, but the correlation is absolutely obvious. Now, of course, then, the question is, who can afford social protection, which is costly, which implies redistribution systems, regulations, some of which business would say hamper their flexibility, because if you have a regulation that, you know, you cannot just hire and fire, then this will be seen as a friction in a formidably well transparent working market economy. It's the same for unemployment, it's the same for training, education. So at the end of the day, the experience proves that putting together health system is easier when you're rich than when you're poor. There are a few examples which I think Valentin knows in her origin country, of a country who stepped in vigorously in trying to provide health insurance to its population in a LDC. I haven't seen much of that around. So then the question is, and that was the point which Juan Somavia was making yesterday again in this ECOSOC session, which I also attended, we have to care about this side of the crisis, not just in times of crisis, but in normal times. And seen from where I am, again, the more we can address the social pain of a more efficient world economy, and we will have a bit of that, for instance, including in environment. If at the end of the day Copenhagen succeeds in agreeing the burden sharing of carbon emissions, this will impact some industries more than others. This will create green jobs, but it will destroy amber jobs. And this, again, is not painless. So this linkage, in my view, is there. It's obvious in terms of crisis, although some have social safety nets, others do not have. It should be also obvious in hopefully better times. But at the end of the day, for the moment, the best social security for many developing countries is the security of their trade. We could wish that they have more than that in order to amortize the shock of the crisis. The reality for the moment is that this is true for many of them, which is why there is a certain urgency. And I think, to conclude, this 8 for Trade Global Review was clearly marked by this urgency as compared to the first of this kind, which we had in November 07, which was sort of, you know, was in a way calmer. This time, people start seeing things happening, and they see this as a major contribution to exiting the crisis, which I think makes it even more relevant. Thanks for your attention.